Welcome to this week's edition of the Sports Block Podcast. Nathan Stackton here alongside my good friend and co-host, the sports director at KORN Radio in Mitchell, South Dakota, and the voice of the Mitchell Colonels. It's Travis Krins. Travis, welcome to probably the worst sports week of the year for a lot of people. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, a couple days where nothing goes on. Home Run Derby, All-Star Game. Putting together sports like I have to do every day, it's, you know, one of my segments is just all the baseball scores. So there's none of that to, like, you know, a few games Thursday, Friday. So it's, yeah, this is like the 1 week or the 3-4 days where it's the least busy. Couple of WNBA games, you know, British Open starts. Well, that would be about it. So, yeah, this is the quietest week of the entire year.
For sure. We have the ESPYs on Wednesday if you care at all about that. But yeah, it is a very quiet week. I'm very much looking forward to the Open Championship, as I always do every year. It's my favorite tournament of the year. I love the link style course. I love how weather impacts it. We don't expect weather to play that much of a role this week, but you never know. The wind's blowing off the Irish coast. That'll be interesting, so we'll talk more about that here in a moment. We are recording this on All-Star Tuesday, so we know the results of the Home Run Derby. Cal Raleigh defeated Junior Caminero of the Tampa Bay Rays. And so Cal Raleigh leading the majors with 38 home runs at the break. Magnificent. He wins. Byron Buxton made it to the second round, or the semifinals, however you want to call it. O'Neill Cruz with a 513-foot bomb in the first round. That was pretty cool to see. Did you watch this? What were your big takeaways?
I watched approximately 5 minutes of tweeting, you know, nothing happens. Two guys, like, immediately liked Mike.
Oh, I had not seen your tweet. What was the tweet?
You can't watch this thing anymore. And a guy or boss at work said the same thing to me this morning. The camera angle makes this unwatchable. You have no idea what is going on, where the balls are going.
Yep.
I pulled up YouTube, 97, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, Home Run Derbies. The camera would be behind the hitter on either side of them, first base side, third base side, and elevated. So you could see the hitter hit the ball, and all you have to do is pan the camera back, pan it up and back, and you can see where the ball is going to go. And that's the way it was for years, because that's how it should go. And then I didn't continue down my journey of, okay, when did they start changing the camera angle? It's a split screen. It's a split screen. You can't see where the ball lands. There's no. Yeah, if I'm ESPN2, it was a little better with the StatCast version because the camera was behind home plate, but it was like directly behind home plate, a little off to the side, like on the field. And it was sunny out, and you couldn't see where the ball was going. They had the ball tracker technology, like you see, you know, with golf. And when guys tee off, so you can keep track of where the ball is going, they had that.
Yep.
So that was better, and you could see it, but the camera angle was too low, and it was too close. So, again, ESPN messes up everything. I would, as a kid, I would put in a VHS tape, and I would record this. Mm-hmm. And it was great in the late 90s, early 2000s. But you just can't watch it because you can't see anything. So
you are far from the only one who has made reference to ESPN's coverage of it. I always listen to the Dan Lebatard show almost daily, and Chris Cody was unwatchable. Exciting, but also unwatchable just because you could never tell when it was actually a home run. You couldn't see it land because they just kept going back and forth. It didn't help that Carl Ravitch, Eduardo Perez, and I think, was it not Todd Helton? Or some, David Justice, there was another batter there. They were situated on the field, but we were standing in front of them, so they really couldn't see clearly at all. Yeah, like, you need to... We're focused on the where the balls land. We want to see it from start to finish. Now, I think the fact that we have a running time, that maybe factors in because they're swinging so frequently, like, before the ball lands. Not in the case of Byron Buxton. He and his pitching coach, Watkins, is he the third base coach, waiting for each ball to land, and, like, there were some moonshots that Buxton hit. He had a lot of elevation in some of his home runs, so they were taking their sweet time, but you do have pitches kind of going right after, because you have 40 pitches for 3 minutes. So I do understand that you want to see, or, like, you know, you want the camera focused on them hitting, but we also need to see where it lands. We can't just keep doing this split screen. It's ridiculous and a very poor watch.
And you need to give time to admire the home run. So if somebody does hit a 500-foot home run, it doesn't matter, because by the time that ball landed, there's already another ball in the air.
Yep.
It's like, oh, 500-foot. Oh, there's another pitch.
Yes.
But you have to find a... I mean, they've changed it. Okay, now it's 40 pitches. It just isn't 3 minutes of however many you can get.
Mm-hmm.
It's now 3 minutes with a 40-pitch limit. That seems to be about right. But then it takes too long. You got eight hitters. This first round takes 2 hours to get done.
Yep.
So it's like shooting off a bunch of fireworks, but you just shoot them off all at once. Yeah. Instead of shooting them off one at a time, it is, here's 40 fireworks in a row. All right, that's it. So, yeah, I think it's going to change much, but you need to have time to admire the home run a little bit more. It all starts with the camera angle, because if you don't fix that, it's not worth watching.
Well, and you have to strike a delicate balance, because you do want to admire it, but as you said, like, the first round takes almost 2 hours to get through, so it makes it for a longer event. So is there a balance that we can get to? Like, what's the appropriate way to do this nowadays without the event taking longer than 3 hours?
Yeah, it's going to take 3 hours. If you're going to have eight guys, even back in the day when they slowed it down and you had, I guess, 10 outs or 10 pitches that were not home runs, that's still going to take 3 hours plus. So if you're going to have eight guys, it's just how long it's going to take. Even this three-minute format, it's still, okay, you got eight guys, they got 3 minutes apiece, they've got a 30-second timeout, they've got some time in between. If you're like, should that take more than an hour? Probably not. You should be able to get through that in an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was not really paying close attention, and I turned it on. Let's see what's going on. And, of course, the time when it starts, it was 7:17, and I'm like, yeah. Has this goddamn thing not started yet? Have they not started this yet?
Yep.
Like, you should be one or two batters into this thing. But no, it of course has not started yet, because I need these introductions that nobody liked or cared for, and you need to drag it out so it doesn't fucking start till closer to 7:30. So,
yep,
that's just the way it goes. It's could be a lot better.
No,
Okay, yeah, I got another point.
Is it about how Cal Raleigh made it to the top four by less than an inch?
Yeah,
because of the distance of his his longest home run over that of Rooker from the A's. I mean, it was less than an inch deciding this. So if Raleigh doesn't get it by that inch there, then he doesn't win this. Rooker is going to advance against Buxton. And Buxton, too, I'm going to just go back to Buxton for a second, that I really wish he would have. He had, I think, 3 outs to work with without the clock, the bonus round or whatever in the first round. He had 20 home runs. He gets 21, maybe 22. He's the top seed then. He doesn't have to go against Junior Camarino in the second round, which was a little bit of a disadvantage for him. It would have been better if he could have won there. So, but then again, he could have taken a few more swings in the timed portion of it, because he left 7 pitches out there in the first round and then 3 in the semifinals. So Buxton could have done better. But the decision, the tie-breaking rule to go with the longest distance home run if there's a tie, for Rooker to lose by an inch, that stings a lot. Now, and it ultimately decided who won, because it was Cal Raleigh who advanced and then ultimately won. So I don't know if you have thoughts on that, or did you have another point in mind?
Yeah, I don't know if you do a swing off, a quick swing off, or you want to keep this thing rolling. And it's very, you know, who knows? I mean, with it coming down to an inch, who knows how accurate the measurements are.
Yep.
Some of the home runs I saw in the highlights, like, they were, say, barely over the fence, but they weren't that far over the fence. And I'm like, 80 feet. I'm like, that looks like it's 20 foot over the fence. How is it 480 feet?
Yep.
So, how precise those measurements are, who knows?
Well, they should, like, wouldn't it be easy to track it with, you know, now that they have StatCast and whatnot, and, you know, put a chip in the ball? I mean, that would certainly, I mean, they could figure out the launch angle and the miles per hour right away. You would think it'd be easy to measure the feet that this
maybe goes. It is pretty accurate too. Maybe they are, you know, within a couple feet either. If you're within a couple feet, all right, I'll give it to you.
I'm sure it's a little arbitrary here, but did you see the highlight of the kid who robbed the home run away? I can't remember who it was that hit it, but kid jumped up and had the glove over the fence, took away a home run, and the umpire still gave it to him. No, that should be an out.
Yeah, you can't be having people take away home runs. Like, you know what? You got kids out there. We're not jumping on the fence. You know, we can.
But that's a great play by the kid.
Good for the kid, but sit your ass down. If it's over the fence, it's over the fence. You know, Cal Raleigh is the big story of the season, and you got Junior Caminero is a guy that nobody ever heard of. That he can, this helps him become a little bit more well known with his performance. And Judge and Ohtani have done it in the past, but they didn't do it this year. I guess this goes back to the slam dunk contest, and it's not that way quite with baseball, but it's like your two big guys are Judge and Ohtani, and they didn't do it this year, and they're having, you know, they should both hit over 50 home runs again. I just don't know why baseball doesn't push them to do it, or if they do, these guys don't want to do it. And you look at, you know, back in our day, Ken Griffey Jr. did 8 of these things.
Mm-hmm.
He was in it almost every year.
Mm-hmm.
McGuire and Sosa, 98, 99, 2000, 2001, when these guys are hitting 60 to 65 home runs in a year, they are in it every year.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys are, you know, so I don't know. No, Barry Bonds, his greatest stretch in the early 2000s, he was 36 to 39 years old. Barry Bonds was still in the goddamn home run derby at 39 goddamn years old in 2004. Why? Because he was the best hitter. He was the best home run hitter. So that's what you need to have. They don't need to do it every year, but it would seem to be more years than not. Judge and Ohtani, we are going to need you to be in this thing, because this is their biggest thing they have until probably the league championship series. They had 5.7 million viewers, which was up slightly compared to last year. So almost 6 million people watched this thing, and the All-Star game gets tonight.
It almost should, I don't know if the requirement's the right word, but like the top 4 home run leaders through the first half of the year should automatically get bids to the home run derby. Now, it's a matter of if they want to do it or not. You know, you would hope they would accept, but then you could have 4 additional wild cards, maybe one that, you know, fans choose, and then 3 others based on, you know, just, I don't know, certain criteria or whatever. But that'd be a way to ensure that you have the top home run guys of the year in there to compete. But who, you know, we've always said, you know, or we've said before that sometimes the home run derby, you can come out of the All-Star break and it can really mess with your swing because you've been just trying to jack it out. So much in such a short time period that it can affect the swing for the second half of the year. So I don't know if that's, you know, one of the reasons too that people maybe wouldn't want to do it if they're the home run leaders. But Certainly,
like I see, like all of these guys, like before, you would see guys before a game saying, "Okay, we're gonna simulate a round of the Home Run Derby." So they're obviously doing this before. So I just, you know, Jazz Chisholm was awful. It sounded like he had three.
Yep.
He shouldn't have been in there in the first place.
Yeah, the Yankees said it's jazz time at 8 o'clock or whatever.
And fuck.
Yeah, that not so great there for Jazz Chisholm.
And he said, yeah, he was just trying to swing normal because he didn't want to mess up the swing. Well, if that's what you're gonna do, then we don't need you in this goddamn thing.
Yep.
We need you to try to hit home runs.
Yep. So congrats again to Cal Raleigh, and we'll see how him winning the Home Run Derby, how that affects him in his pursuit of 60 home runs here for the entire
season. He should slow down, I think, quite significantly. So if, what is he at, 38 right now?
Yes, 38.
You would think he will get to 50. He needs 12 more home runs. But I'm going to say he is going to slow down a lot. Just because because he already has. There was a stretch in the last week. He was 6 of 36, and all 6 of those hits were home runs. So if he slows down and people want to talk about the Home Run Derby, no, this is already happening. 6 of 36, all 6 hits were home runs. So if he does that, sure, he can, you know, go 10 for 100, but if they're all home runs, he'll be fine. But I think it is not, you know, talk about 60 home runs, let's get to 50 first. Because right now he's at 38 with, you know, 65, 70 games to go here. Less than 70 games to go.
Mm-hmm.
He's a .226 career hitter.
Yep.
His average has now dropped to .259. So where is he going to end up hitting? I would imagine he's probably going to end up hitting low .240s, upper .230s. That batting average, I think, is going to drop about 20 points. So, and with the, I'm sure they'll talk about it tonight, with the MVP race, as great as Cal Raleigh has been, I'm sure there's people that would vote for him. Like Aaron Judge has been so much better. You just look at their numbers, and like it's not even close. You just look at what they're doing. Aaron Judge is literally hitting 97 points higher than he is, batting average.
I'm sure the OPS is far greater than that, too.
Is his OPS or his OPS plus? Cal Raleigh's at 190, which is 90% above average. Aaron Judge is at 228. He's 38% better than that. His OPS is nearly 200 points better. His on-base percentage is 85 points better. His slugging is 100 points better. Like, he is significantly ahead of Cal Raleigh, but then people want to take into consideration Cal Raleigh is a catcher. But then Aaron Judge is also a Gold Glove outfielder.
Yep.
Has he won a Gold Glove yet? No. But he is he could win a Gold Glove this year. So it's a discussion, but I mean there really isn't a debate of like who should. I mean, he's hitting .355. There is not a single hitter in the National League above .300 at this point. So
yeah, it's bound to come up. You are planning to watch the game, I presume, or record it? Like, how excited are you?
Yeah, we'll watch. I mean, there's nothing. There's some weather tonight, so we're excited about that.
Yep.
Sure we'll miss out again. But, yeah, I mean, there's nothing else going on,
yeah,
so I'm sure.
We're supposed to get some good storms Tuesday night, too, so hopefully those that come to fruition.
Keep it off, and I'm sure it'll be on the scroll, on the TV. Can we adjust something here? I mean, it's the All-Star game. It's not the end-all and be-all here, but...
Well, remember when we were in school, Fox and out of Sioux Falls didn't even carry news. It was just a channel.
No.
So they wouldn't even have, you know, show radar back in the day. One bit of controversy to some... one point of intrigue, I guess, within this All-Star game is Mizorowski... getting the spot, the Phenom Brewers pitcher. He's only pitched 5 starts this year, but it does have a spot, it does have a place in the All-Star game, and some people take issue with that. Do you have any issue with that? Or is this good for baseball because you have a guy that a lot of people are talking about and that they are more prone, perhaps, to watch it? Like, do you think he stole an all-star spot from someone else, or is he coming in after a couple other people backed out either due to injury or for whatever reason?
Again, I think he is the best pitcher I've ever seen, so I'm fine with him in this game. Christopher Sanchez for the Phillies should probably be in over him. Other than that, I guess I'm fine with him being in this game. Ranger Suarez of the Phillies, I think we talked about a little bit last week. I think they offered him, and he said no, because he wanted to get ready for the second half. I saw that out there, and somebody tweeted that, but nobody else picked up on that. So the Phillies had the biggest problem because they had two pitchers that should be in this game, but one of them already declined, but nobody realized that. Christopher Sanchez, I don't know why he is not in the game.
Did he decline as well?
No, they did not even ask him.
Oh.
I guess. He's got an ERA of 2.5. Three guys have a better ERA than that, so I don't know how you have a guy that has the fourth best ERA in baseball, and he's not in this game or not asked to be one of the first replacements. I do not know how that happens. So I would say he'd be the only guy that I would have a problem with. But other than that, yeah, Jacob Mizorowski, 25 innings. He's had one bad start is all.
Can we call him the Miz, or is that taken by that wrestler in WWE?
That's what they call him, but it's like it's already taken, and you think of that other guy before this, so it's unfortunate that it's taken, but that's what I think they're going with.
Did he have a show on USA at one point, like a reality show of some sort?
Yeah, he's had a bunch of different stuff that he's done. Jacob Mizorowski, you cannot deny that he's one of the best pitchers in baseball right
now. Absolutely.
I mean, he deserves it based on if you've watched him pitch. It's like, yes, he is among the all-star pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think he's the best. He's among the top. I don't know how you would not say he's one of the top 10 pitchers right now since he's been called up.
I think, though,
over the past month.
I think it's just because that they're having issues with it because it's such a small sample size throughout the year. Like, we're only going back, for five starts, whereas other pitchers like Ranger Suarez or whatever have done it for the majority of the first half. So what determines how like you making an all-star? Is it minimum starts? Is it impact? Is it going to be just eyeballs here? Because it is an exhibition event.
You want to highlight him, and even though he doesn't have a lot of starts, he is one of the best pitchers. He just is.
Yep.
So yep. I think he is the best of all these guys. He's my favorite and the best. He throws 102.
Even greater than Skubal, huh? Wow.
Because he is what? He is what? 6'8". He's very tall, long arms. He throws 102. I think it looks and feels like 105 because of the extension he gets, because his arms are so long, and then the extension he gets off the mound. So if you throw the thing at 60 feet, it feels like it's coming in 55 because of that extra reach. And I just never seen anybody throw the pitches that he throws.
Mm-hmm.
He's been great. So.
So the division leaders, the Blue Jays, are ahead. Atop.
I mean, his last start was against the Dodgers, and Ohtani hit a home run against him to start the game.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think he struck out eight guys in the next three innings.
He shut down the Dodgers after that. So.
Yeah, and it was him and Kershaw. We talked about that last week.
Yep.
And then, gave up the home run. It did not allow a run again. He went six innings. He had some trouble in the sixth. He worked out of it. He was very excited. And, now he hasn't pitched since then, and he'll hopefully pitch tonight, and then he probably won't pitch until maybe next week. So they'll give him a lot of rest. But, he is the real deal.
Our division leaders currently in the American League, the Blue Jays lead the AL East, the Tigers lead the AL Central, and the Astros lead the AL West. In the NL, the Phillies are a half game up on the Mets, the Cubs are one game up on the Brewers, and the Dodgers are ahead in the NL West. Now, normally, at this time, we kind of, even like before the All-Star break, maybe a third of the way through, you know, end of May, beginning of June, we kind of know who we feel good about in terms of winning the division, and a lot of these things will not change necessarily. But this year, it does seem like there's more volatility in terms of who's going to win these divisions. So, of the current division leaders, how many of them will stay atop their respective divisions when the regular season is over?
Detroit and Houston are fine, and the Dodgers are fine, so that's three. Yeah, all the others are within two games, so I mean, that's tough. Yeah, Mets or Phillies, it was the Mets for a long time, and they had their big losing streak. I'm going to say the Mets still win that division. Cubs and Brewers, you know, the Cubs have slowly, not that they've come back, I mean, they're 18 games over 500, just the Brewers have gotten hot.
Mm-hmm.
So I still like the Cubs. So I want to change the NL East, and then the AL East. Again, Toronto went on that long winning streak. Now they've lost a couple in a row. The Yankees have their pitching problems. And the Red Sox all of a sudden have won 10 in a row.
Yeah.
To come out of nowhere. So they were two games under 500. And now they're three games back in the division. So, yeah, the AL East is the best race. I'll give it to the Yankees, even though, you know, they've got their problems.
Mm-hmm.
I don't say, as far as like who's making the playoffs, I don't think a whole lot is going to change.
Right.
You know, the American League, Tampa Bay now is a game and a half back of Seattle. And then you have Texas 3.5 back, Twins are 4 back. I think he can, you know, cut off the Twins and Angels. And the National League is close, you know, with, you know, one or two of those teams from the West. Did the Cardinals get in? Your Reds are still in it. So it's with this format, it's always going to come down to the final couple of days. Just who gets hot? Who has not had a long winning streak yet? The Brewers have won 7 in a row, so they're hot right now. But then you got to figure, okay, at some point things are going to even out.
Mm-hmm.
So. The division races, I would say, I like the Mets and the Yankees to win, are not currently.
Okay, and the Cubs to hold on.
Yes.
Okay, very good. So four of the six then will remain. Let's play a little game, go. Baseball superlatives.
Oh.
So let's go with the biggest, best surprise of the first half of the regular season, team-wise. Biggest, best surprise.
Biggest, best surprise would be Toronto.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say Toronto.
Any
nobody
reason?
Talked about them too. And I guess Tampa Bay. Well, Toronto. Tampa Bay has lost a lot of close games here the past 2 weeks. They lost 4 in a row. They lost 8 of 10. A lot of them walk-offs, comebacks, games that they have let slip away. So.
Any particular reason you're choosing Toronto as the best surprise?
I don't think anybody had them in the mix here at all. I mean, they're leading the division at, 96 games in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody had them. You know, everybody had Baltimore. They'd be the biggest disappointment, probably. But, no, I mean, they had probably Toronto at, you know, probably fourth this division.
I was just going to get to that. The biggest surprise, biggest disappointing surprise of the first half of the season.
You know, Atlanta's 11 under, but, you know, they've had their usual injuries. But it's got to be Baltimore because their young hitters just haven't hit like you would think. It's all right, this is your second, third, fourth year. And some of them have gotten better, but a lot of them have not, and they've gotten worse. So it's like, well, I hope that their first couple years were not their best years. So, yeah, I mean, Baltimore, they're in last place, probably not going to move out of last place. So, yeah, they would be the most disappointing team because I guess most people thought they would be in the playoffs.
This one is going to be a little bit tricky, but I'm going to go with the best moment from the first half of the season.
Oh, geez. I don't know.
Okay, I think we can. I'll give you some time on that.
Well, maybe you know the Cal Raleigh's. From last night.
Okay.
Otani's back. Just Cal Raleigh doing what he's been doing the whole time. Tarek Skubal's had a couple of nice starts. Best moment? There hasn't been a no-hitter yet. There's been a couple of no. I mean, there's been quite a few really close ones. One hitter, yep. Two hitters.
Yep.
So I would say I got one for you. Best moment would be the Denzel Clark catch for the Athletics
against the A's, or I mean the Angels. Yeah, against the Angels.
Yeah, so when he jumped over the wall, like first yep. pitch of the game, first yep. batter of the game. As far as player, I would say that would be my number one.
Okay.
I'd go with that.
Okay, how about biggest splash? Like, who's made the biggest splash of the first half of the season?
I would say Jacob Mizorowski.
Yeah, I figured that's where you were going with it.
Like, he is a top three pitching prospect. But sometimes those guys get called up and they're not good right away, but he's been even better than he was in the minor leagues. So he immediately comes up and just doesn't give up any hits or runs. He just shuts teams down for long periods of time. So he's been, that's the thing about baseball where these guys can come up. And I mean, he was a top prospect, so it's not surprising, but mm-hmm. sometimes those guys don't work out.
A couple more here for you. What's something that's going to happen in the second half of the regular season that you want to see happen?
Paul Skenes is going to win a game again at some point. He's 4-8. His fucking ERA is 2.01. It's so fucking stupid. So goddamn dumb.
It's like Jacob deGrom a few years ago with the Mets.
Yes, it's just stupid. Got him and Zach Wheeler in a pretty good race for National League Cy Young. And as the Pirates probably limit Paul Skenes here in innings, Zach Wheeler only has one more inning pitched right now. But if Zach Wheeler ends up with 20 or 30 more innings pitched, he'll have better strikeout numbers than Paul Skenes. He's in his mid-30s, and Zach Wheeler is very underrated. But is this the year that he wins it? And they say, you know what, Paul Skenes, you'll get yours at some point, and we're going to give it to Zach Wheeler. So those are the two right now. What was the question again?
Well, what's something that's going to happen in the second half of the season that you want to see happen?
I want to see the Twins just fall off the earth.
Oh, okay.
Just lose like 10 in a row. It's like enough of this.
You know, my mother-in-law was fortunate to go to the game on Friday, and I looked and I said, wow, you are in for a treat because you see Paul Skenes against Joe Ryan. And I think Skenes was only limited to 77 pitches over 5 innings. Yeah. So a little ridiculous there. Final one here. What's something that's going to happen in the second half of the regular season that you don't want to happen?
Something that's going to happen that I don't want to happen.
Yep.
I don't know. Don't have any rooting interest against anybody.
Except the Twins. You want to see the Twins fall off the face.
Yeah. When's Buxton going to get hurt? What do you know? You went 5-for-5 with the cycle on, was it Friday?
Saturday. Yeah, Saturday. That was cool.
Saturday.
First one ever at Target Field, too.
For him. And then, like you said, like he was nervous because it was his bobblehead day. I'm like, you've like done this a long time, and man, this is not your first bobblehead day.
Yeah,
you're like 32 years old. I just thought it was weird. Like, oh, it's my bobblehead day, and I did really good. So he had mentioned, I think it was yesterday or whenever, like he doesn't want to be traded. He's got a no trade clause. He wants to spend the rest of his career with the Twins. And it's like, why? Don't you want to win? Yeah. Don't you want to go somewhere and fucking win a World Series? Don't you want to win a playoff game? Don't you want to play in playoff games? Why the hell would you want to stay with the Twins?
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. And the Twins, you know, there's been talk about trading Griffin Jacks or Johan Duran to the Phillies. We'll see if they do any of that, but they're not going to trade Buxton. And if he gets hurt in the next 3 weeks, it's like, well, yes, no shit.
Right.
No shit, you trade. It's like they're just not going to. They're gonna. He's gonna be their guy. That hopefully he can be there for 15 years. You know, already almost been there for 15 years. Like he's gonna be their guy. It's like, well, you better hope he stays healthy. And even if he does, does it matter? No. So. You don't want to, I guess you don't want to see it, or but.
Yep. No, I get it.
Like, is he just going to stay healthy now when he's approaching his mid-30s? It's like, okay, I was often hurt in my 20s, and now in my 30s, I'm going to pull a reverse Trout and a reverse Ken Griffey Jr., where my 30s are going to be my healthiest years.
You never know. You never know. Hard to believe he's already, it was 12, 13 years ago that he was drafted. Yeah. I mean, he's been around a long time, and he's, you know, been this what number one ranked player and stuff. He's kind of, he's showing you reasons why, and like this is the frustrating part is like what could have been if he had been able to stay healthy for the vast majority of his career to this point. So first half, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean it just took him a long time to figure out how to hit, and then he would get hurt.
Yep.
And it just was like, well, Jesus Christ, this is 10 years now. Whether either you suck or you're hurt.
Mm-hmm. So
I like what the Athletics are doing. Did I mention this last week? I like what the Athletics what they've built. So you look at their lineup, they've got some young hitters. They've got Jacob Wilson, who is the starting shortstop for the American League tonight. He is hitting .332. He's a rookie. They've got Brent Rooker, who is not a rookie, but the Twins just gave up on him. He played 65 games for the Twins, and the Twins just moved on.
Hmm.
He hit 200 in those 65 games. He had about 9 home runs, which is pretty good. But they just shipped him on off. And now Brent Rooker is one of the better power hitters in baseball. They have Nick Kurtz at first base, who has 17 home runs. He's a rookie, and he is somebody they drafted last year, and he is already up and already productive. Their catcher is Shea Langeliers, who is decent. He's going to hit 20 home runs. They got Tyler Soderstrom. He's somebody that's going to hit 30 home runs this year. So they've got some young hitters, and that's exciting for them. And I'm excited for the Athletics.
Very good. First half of the MLB season is in the books. MLB draft was Sunday night and then into Monday here. Any thoughts on the draft at all? The Nationals surprised some by going with a high school shortstop, but this was a draft that I've heard lacked a surefire number one pick, so predictions varied across the board.
You had Cade Anderson, the pitcher from LSU. He went to Seattle at number 3.
Yeah, just fell into their laps.
Because Seattle needs more fucking pitchers. So, I mean, they pick him. He had the 130-pitch shutout against Coastal Carolina there in the first game of the World Series there a month ago. So he went 3. Twins took a shortstop from Wake Forest, Merrick Houston. He's really, they say, like, he is an excellent defender. Like, he's a gold glove level defensive shortstop. Doesn't have a lot of power. He has doubled his home runs every year from like 4 to 8 to 15, and you know he's a good hitter. So they picked a guy last year, Kalen Culpepper. I think he was from Kansas State. I think he's in Double A now, and he's another shortstop who seems to be very similar. I think there were there 17 shortstops picked in the first round.
Yikes, that's a lot.
Which okay, they're there, and then. The theory being you could move those guys anywhere. So you just pick them and, you know, put them at third base. You can put them at second. You can put them in the outfield. You can put them wherever. So Twins draft another shortstop who, you know, who knows. They picked a pitcher out of Alabama, Riley Quick, with their compensatory pick at number 36. He's a big guy at 6'6", 255. Quentin Young, he's another shortstop. The high schooler from California, he might be the most exciting guy that they picked, or the guy who might be the best. And he is a high schooler, but he is 6'6 already in high school. He was committed to LSU, but we will see what he develops into. And then you see this guy they picked from Oregon.
I did not know.
Oh my! Yeah, you. Where is he at? You should, If you can, you should Google this. This guy needs to be Googled.
Okay, let's see here.
With the fourth pick of the draft, 119, Jason Reitz, R-E-I-T-Z, R-E-I-T-Z. Give me your reaction to this guy.
Okay.
Right-hander from Oregon in the fourth round. The Twins pick him. Jason Reitz, we'll call him. What does he look like?
Oh, he looks very tall.
He's 6 feet 11.
That's incredibly tall.
His legs. Look at his legs.
Yes, I've been looking at one picture of him. He's in the bullpen area. It looks like, yeah, he is a tall son of a gun. Trying to think, he looks like someone. I can't think of it now.
Somebody said he looks like the guy from the Savannah Bananas who's on the stilts. And he comes up there and he's 15 feet tall.
He's a tall son of a gun. What is that? Like, how good's he going to be?
Who knows? I mean, with those guys, sometimes, you know.
Does he have the potential to be good, or is his height going to get in the way?
Yeah, probably his height. I mean, the Twins are going to mess him up, so it ain't going to matter. He was at St. Mary's. He went to Oregon this year. He was good.
I saw that the Twins have, like, the fourth highest amount of money in their farm system. Is that right?
Could be, yeah. It's...
Like, what does that mean? Does that mean players on contract, or is that investments in the farm system? Like, is that salary? Like, is that good? Like, I would assume you want a high amount of dollars in your farm system, but what does that really indicate?
I think it's all about the same. I don't know what the money is. You know, I mean, 10 to 15 million, I don't know what you saw or where how that compares to other
they were just showing
teams,
it like on ESPN like before the draft of farm system or it was just how much money they have in the farm systems and
I don't know what that's based on.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean it's not bad. I wouldn't think it's bad. But I don't know what that is or how that compares to other stuff.
Okay.
I just look at all, like, every, what was it? Tampa Bay sent a pick to Baltimore before the draft, which, you know, you couldn't do before. And now the last couple of years you can trade draft picks. Before the draft, it was like, 30-something overall, and it was for, like, a relief pitcher or something. It was a very, cost-cutting move for Tampa Bay. It's like, oh, give us this good reliever so we don't have to spend $2 million on some draft pick. So, yeah, I mean, a tall guy had a 3.5 ERA. He threw 64 innings. So, well, with a lot of these guys, it's like, how many are going to pitch this year in the minors? Some are not. Some are.
Mm-hmm.
And how long does it take them to ramp up to get to 100 innings? It just takes so long because they don't throw much in college, and it just takes them forever to come in. We see with Paul Skenes and how they limit his innings, and they're going to have to limit Mizorowski's innings. It's just like 120 to 150 innings is all we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like it's been more common that guys have been called up earlier, and they've been good. And we talked about some guys with the Athletics that have been called up, and the Angels like to call guys up early. So what guy is going to be up early next year from this draft? Jack Caglione from Florida. He went to the Royals. He's already up. He's not been good.
I'm going to call it right now the Angels pitcher that they took second overall.
Like him, is he a high schooler?
I don't know.
I think either he was a high schooler or who he was, but people were surprised by that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like that Kade Anderson from LSU.
Yeah.
He would seem to be a candidate. Like he could probably be up next year if everything falls into place.
Yep.
And we saw Cam Smith get picked by the Cubs last year in the first round. They traded him in the offseason for Kyle Tucker to Houston, and then Cam Smith is already up with the Astros, and he's been great already. So he's, again, he was somebody that was drafted a year ago. He's 22 years old, and he'll probably be an all-star next year. He's hitting .277. He's got 7 home runs in 82 games. He's been really good for a rookie. So, yeah, he's already up and contributing to a playoff team.
There you go. Speaking of Cam Smith, there's a Cameron Smith in the Open Championship, which is taking tees off Thursday at the Royal Portrush Golf Club in Portrush, Northern Ireland. Xander Schauffele is your defending Open champion. Again, it's my favorite tournament of the year just because of the weather, the link style. I love it. I will get up early and watch this. Again, weather.
Did you watch the Scottish Open this weekend?
I did not, but I saw Rory McIlroy.
Oh.
I involved with stuff, and I would have liked to. I saw Rory was tied for the lead headed into the final round and did not win. There's a lot of pressure on Rory McIlroy. Being from Northern Ireland, you know the pressure is going to be on him. He hasn't exactly played well since winning at Augusta and completing the career Grand Slam. I still would put Rory right up on the short list in terms of guys who are going to win. But, you know, taking out the weather, does that mean you have guys like... you know, Scottie Scheffler or, you know, Jordan Spieth, who we haven't really heard much from here in a long time. Does that mean one of them can kind of get up there? Because weather is the ultimate factor, and if it doesn't play as big of a role as we have seen in previous years, does that mean it's going to be someone else? Maybe a Colin Morikawa could do it, a Corey Connors from Canada. I'm always just intrigued because there are so many different guys. You get a lot of guys from like a European tour, guys you normally don't see on the PGA Tour that I have no idea who they are. But, you know, it's just a fun tournament to watch. It's early in the morning, so you can have your whole afternoon and evening to do stuff. You don't need to worry about watching golf. But I am, of course, as always, intrigued by Rory McIlroy with the pressure on him this week. Scottie Scheffler, dominant as always. If I gave you those two or the field, what would you take the field?
Yeah, we're taking the field. Those are the two favorites on the odds. I would take the field. Yeah, who is the guy we've never heard of with the weird name that's going to be there? You never know what to expect. Is it going to be, you know, 15 under? Is that going to win it, or could you win it at even par? Because sometimes you just don't know based on what course they go to and what conditions that they play. Say Tommy Fleetwood, he is never, I don't think he's ever won a PGA event.
Didn't he lose about
a month ago, like in just horrific fashion, where he led and then he gave up a couple shots in the final two. Like he had a 2-shot lead with 2 to go, and I think they flashed up. Like he had never won a PGA event. I'm like, Tommy Fleetwood's never won on the PGA Tour, which was a stunner to me. So I'm going to pick him. He'll maybe be my favorite to win.
Okay.
And you know, I think it helps for me to have interest that it's, you know, it's this thing's in the morning. It finishes in the early afternoon.
Yep.
You had the Scottish Open last week. It was like, oh, it was 2 o'clock and the thing was done.
Yep.
So maybe that'll pique my interest. But it's like, hey, once this is done, we're done with the majors.
Yep.
You've got other big tournaments, but it's like, oh, this is it.
Yep.
And yep. People move on to football, I guess.
Once the FedEx playoffs begin, it's like, okay, who really cares? You have some really intriguing groupings, though, in here. 3:58. I don't know if this is Eastern or Central time. I'm going to say it's Central. I'm going to say it's Eastern. And maybe I'm wrong. But you have Jon Rahm, Xander Schauffele, and J.J. Spahn. Spahn was competitive in one of these recent tournaments and majors, so that's going to be interesting. Then the group right after that is Shane Lowry from Ireland, Scottie Scheffler, and Colin Morikawa. So that is like those two pairings or those two groupings back to back, very intriguing and probably must. The cameras will be following both those groups very closely. Victor Hovland and Ludvig Åberg are two guys that really, I think, could win in this tournament because they're from Europe. Hovland's from Norway. Olberg is from Sweden. So they played link style a lot. They're paired with Jordan Spieth at 859. And then you have Rory McIlroy, Justin Thomas, and Tommy Fleetwood after that. So there are a couple of groupings back-to-back, one in the early stages of the day and then one at the later stages that I think that's where the best golf is going to be. And if I had to venture a guess, it won't be... They won't be leading at the end of the first day. It's going to be some guy we've never heard of, like, let's see.
Is it going to be like Trevor Van Somethingburger?
Dean Burmeester from South Africa.
Sure.
Yep.
There's got to be a van or something in there.
Yep.
A burger. There's got to be a burger or some burger in there.
Yes. Or Sadam Kakwanjana from Thailand, I believe.
Okay, give me a Asian player as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. So
me. Yeah.
I think one of them will. I think someone that we've never heard of before is going to be leading at the end of the first day. But then someone from one of those four groupings that I just gave you is going to be leading at the end of day two. And I would say that's going to be Rory or Scotty. Tommy Fleetwood's right up there. Victor Hovland's in the mix, too. So I'm always just very intrigued by, you know, how many... I don't have the stats in front of me here, but for Royal Portrush, how many potbelly bunkers are in here? Because the bunkers in the middle of the fairway, sometimes you know, the ball's nestled in. You can't hit it out going towards the hole. You have to hit back. Some of these greens are incredibly big. They can split into multiple holes, but you could take a putter from like 30 yards out from the green and get it right up there just because of how the links and the course is. So it's completely different from any other tournament. I think that's why I like watching it the most. So very intrigued by the Open here. And looking forward to that.
This is on NBC, right?
Yes, USA will be carrying that Peacock, and then NBC as well. So that's where you can find. And they do a great job with their golf coverage. So
the course that Marcus and I went to outside of Chicago in August.
Oh yes, yep.
Like it was you know, obviously wasn't exactly like this, but it was similar. You know, like there were no trees on the course. There were no trees.
Yep.
You know, you hit it a couple times into the deep stuff. And it was interesting. And the conditions were like what you would hope. Like it was, I don't want to say it was chilly out because during the day it got quite warm, but it was breezy out. There was a wind. It's like they were playing this course that we don't usually see. And the conditions, it's windy. It's how you would hope the conditions would be because you're trying to play a course like this. So that was Marcus's one complaint, was like every hole kind of felt the same. But yeah, there were no trees, and stay out of the bunker and hit it straight. So it was interesting, and of course that you don't play here because we don't have any of those.
Yeah, it would be different, like if the winds were changing constantly, you know, throughout. But yeah. Fun nonetheless. So again, really looking forward here to this tournament. Wimbledon just wrapped up in London.
Yeah.
You had Jannik Sinner defeating Carlos Alcaraz on the men's side. And then on the women's side, you had Iga Swiatek take care of Anna Musova from America 6-0, 6-0. So there wasn't much intrigue there. But any thoughts from Wimbledon?
No, I saw a couple minutes of it. Rory McIlroy type prediction here, like the Alcaraz and Sinner there, I mean, they're probably both going to win 15 majors apiece.
Yeah. Yep.
Sinner is what? He's won what? Four or five?
Yes.
Alcaraz, I think four. Alcaraz, he has won back to back. Wimbledon's, he was like, what, on a 25 match win streak?
Yep.
Like, these are the next two guys. Djokovic is, I think he's pretty much finished.
Mm-hmm.
Age and injuries catching up to him. So he's probably done. You know, next year is probably his last year, and he should probably call it a day. And then you got these are the next two guys. So Alcaraz has been around for a couple of years, and you know, Sinner's had the number one ranking for a while. So this is usually how tennis goes, where there's like two or three guys that win most of the time.
Mm-hmm. NBA Summer League, any thoughts on that?
I just don't know why it's on all the time.
I don't either.
I don't know. Who cares? Okay, I don't know. Who cares? Cooper Flagg had a really bad game, then he had a really good game, then now he's done playing. Yep. So he played twice, and that was it.
And if you bet on Summer League, do you bet on the Summer League at all?
Oh, my God. No.
Okay, if you bet on Summer League, you might be a degenerate.
Jeepers creepers.
I mean, that, just saying, like, why?
I mean, you wouldn't have any less of a shot of getting things right or wrong on Summer League than we would on anything else. Because, no, I mean, if you bet on stuff, like, you don't know who's, you have no idea what's going to happen. If you want to be frustrated, and if you think you know what's going on, bet on a bunch of stuff and see how that plays out.
Yeah, I suppose. I just think you never know, like, oh, how good's everyone's summer
good
team
Lord.
Going? Like, if you're going that in depth, no thank you. No thank you.
No.
Anything else we need to get to here for the week? Like I said, this is a very, this is the slowest sports week of the year. And then, you know, pretty soon we got college football rolling in here, so we'll be previewing that. But anything else we need to get to here this week?
Buxton has 17 steals. He's not been caught yet.
That's very impressive.
Nope, I don't think anybody's ever gotten 30 steals and not been caught. I think Trey Turner was close. Buxton's only been thrown out 12 times in his life in the majors. He's only been thrown out twice in the last 4 years.
And how many stolen bases does he have?
Not a lot. He has 17 this year. Like, he doesn't run a lot for a guy when he's like second in sprint speed. He only had 7 last year in 100 games. He had 9, 6. Like, this is already his second best year for stolen bases. And it's only at 17. So he just surpassed 100 steals this year.
Hmm.
So we'll see if he ever gets caught. He has 21 home runs, 17 steals. That could be real close to a 30-30 season. He's never come close to a 30-30 season. Because he's never been close on both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Phillips is a guy from Sioux Falls. He went to Roosevelt. He was picked Sunday by the Red Sox, number 33 overall.
Oh, very cool.
He's a pitcher from Sioux Falls. He went to Tennessee. Good, big guy. And he also played, I remember he played basketball at Roosevelt. He was a decent basketball player, but obviously a much better pitcher. I think he was also on one of the Little League teams from Sioux Falls years ago. So he's with the Red Sox.
Did he make it to Williamsport at all?
Yep, that was a team that made it to, okay. I think they've had,
okay, to the Little League World Series.
Well, they've had two teams that have made it all the way, I think, and he was on maybe the first one.
Okay, very cool.
And then, I guess, final thing, I saw the schedule here for this Players Era. I guess it's a tournament.
Oh, yeah, for college basketball. Yes, yes.
TNT is going to do it, so it's going to be good. It's,
yep,
Thanksgiving week, Monday. It starts Monday and goes throughout the week. And this looks kind of like an NCAA tournament type deal.
Wall-to-wall TV or games on.
This is 1 o'clock, so assuming this is noon is when this starts. I mean, you've got St. John's and Iowa State. You have Oregon and Auburn. Alabama, Gonzaga on the first day. I mean, there's a lot of good and Creighton and Iowa State.
I think Alabama plays at midnight. Either like midnight Eastern or midnight Central Time one of the days, too. So, yeah, I mean, it's a crazy schedule, but a good schedule. Oh, I saw SDSU's playing Oregon, I believe, November 12th in men's basketball.
Is that right?
Yeah.
No.
But, yeah.
So we get these schedules, and I guess it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So, however they, I don't know, however I guess you play two games and they figure out, I don't know how they figure out how moves on, how you move on in this thing. I don't know. So, I mean, there are 16 teams in this, so I have no idea how you figure out after two games.
Right.
Championship game is Wednesday night at 8:30. Third place game was at 6. So, yeah, something different.
That's going to go against the Maui Invitational. How are we going to flip back and forth between that?
Maui Invitational went very good last year with Auburn in it.
Yep.
Let's see what...
The field this year is atrocious. It is not good.
It looks like it. That's, what was it? Arizona, let's see. Oof. Arizona State, Boise State, North Carolina State, Seton Hall, Texas, Washington State, USC. What happened here? What happened? All of these teams had to go to... Where is this at? Vegas? This players thing?
Yes.
I think it's in Vegas?
Yep.
So what is this? This says Southwest. Is Southwest Airlines now a sponsor? Southwest Mount... What happened to Maui Jim, Maui Jim?
I don't know.
What happened to Maui Jim? Now it's the Southwest Maui Invitational.
I mean, Chaminade's got a good chance in this field here. I mean, there's nothing... North Carolina State is intriguing because of Will Wade heading over there, and he's, you know, his teams are routinely good, but this is a horrible field.
Yeah, to answer your question, I think you can probably skip the Maui Invitational. Yes. Yeah,
I would agree. Agreed. Anything else we need to get to before we say so long?
Nope, should be good.
All right. Well, you enjoy the All-Star game. All the best to you, Melissa and Rachel, and enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you next week, my friend.
All righty. We'll see you next week.
Travis Crittenden's joining me here. Sports Block Podcast. Always appreciate his time, as always. So very, very looking forward to, but as I said, very, very much looking forward to the Open Championship. It's my favorite golf tournament of the year. Very, very excited for it. We'll see. I want Rory to win. I want him to win on home soil. I want him to win this in Northern Ireland at Royal Portrush. It's going to be tough. A lot of pressure on him. So ultimately, I think I'll go Victor Hovland. I prefer Scottie Scheffler, but let's go Victor to win it here, if not Rory. So coverage on USA, Peacock, and NBC. Hopefully you enjoyed the All-Star game if you watched it. Baseball starting back up on Friday. Next week we'll be back to talk about whatever in the world of sports. And yeah, as we get closer to the beginning of August, we'll get our college football preview schedule set. And that'll mean the return of Charlie Hildebrand, which we're very much looking forward to previewing the upcoming college football season. Podcast can be found on Spotify, also on podcast.com. Just search Sports Block. Follow me on Twitter at Andy Stack and Facebook Nathan Stack, and Travis Crins on Twitter at Travis Crins. A link to the podcast posted middle to later part of each week. Have a great rest of your week. Enjoy the cooler weather. Hopefully the storms rolled through. We're getting some rain hopefully here. But regardless, happy birthday to my son Jason, turning 3 on Saturday. Where does time go by? Time flies, I gotta tell you. Birthday's on Friday. Party's on Saturday. So Friday, I'll have a 3-year-old. Yowza. So for all of us here at the Sports Block Podcast, for Travis, I'm Nathan. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you next week on another edition of the Sports Block Podcast.